This is Family Electric Ghost, and we're live on our Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch channels. And we have Alex Fink here for the first time. How are you doing today?
Very good. How are you?
Now, you're the CEO of otherweb.com, right?
Yep, that's correct.
And we're going to get into what the benefits of otherweb.com are. But just before that, we are on Newsly. Newsly is a podcast platform, so you can listen to this podcast. We're a featured podcast on Newsly. So use coupon code GHOST and get 1 month free premium subscription so you can stop scrolling and start listening. So you're the founder of OtherWeb. It's a new platform that allows readers to read news and commentary and other podcasts and search the web without paywalls, clickbait, ads, auto-playing videos, affiliate links, and other types of things. So what made you come up with this service? You found that those were common problems that consumers were complaining about?
So it was certainly a problem I had, but let's take a step back. I spent something like 15 years working on perception systems, cameras, computer vision, that sort of thing. And at some point it has dawned on me that the world does not need more cameras, that we're producing enormous amounts of information, but somehow at the end of the day, we're all consuming junk, right? And so I decided to sort of reorient myself from producing more information to filtering the junk out of the information we already have. So OtherWeb started initially just as a set of models to evaluate content. And initially we produced a nutrition label for articles. And then we decided, okay, if we have this capability, why don't we build a platform, aggregate content from all over the web, and filter the junk out, and then give some controls to the users to really control what they see in their feed, because they don't have this control on other platforms today.
So, like, this is competing against the Chromes of the world. Is that the point?
I would say it competes more against every intermediary between content creators and content consumers. From the Googles of the world to the Twitters and Facebooks of the world to the Feedlys and Flipboards of the world. So basically any way that you find content today, especially if it's written content, I think we can do it better for most use cases. And we keep expanding and adding more functionality. So initially we just started with news. And now we already have 8 different types of content on the platform. We will add more over time.
So maybe you can explain to people, like, if they get your OtherWeb, how do they configure it to get the filters or the things that they want? You ask them questions about what they want to see, and then it starts to, you know, provide them what they're looking for?
Yeah. So the first initialization, when people just download the app or they go on the website, we have a simple onboarding flow where we ask you a bunch of questions, like, how many articles do you typically read per day? Or, like, what things interest you? And we show you 8 categories and you can disable the ones you don't like. Like, we have a lot of people disabling sports and entertainment, for example, because they only care about hard news. Or if you're there for the sports of entertainment, you might want to disable business, for example. So you answer these simple questions and you have a feed that already is configured to what we think you might like. But after that, you can tune things. So one of the controls you have is to set a threshold for every category separately for how much content do you want to see in this category. And we will select only the best articles for the amount that you set. So if you can only afford the time to read 10 articles per day, you might as well read the 10 best ones as opposed to the 10 latest ones, right? Another thing that we allow you to do is disable certain sources. So we currently get news and commentary from about 160 different outlets. But let's say you really dislike a particular one. You have the ability to disable it here. It would be much harder to do it on Google News, let's say, or on Apple News.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good feature, because there's some, you know, there's some sources you don't want. But things are so polarized today. So either side might say, I don't want that. But one of the other things I wanted to say, you say you can do podcasts, so you can pick an actual podcast, come in, so if you had, there's a famous podcast that you want, you can actually have that coming into your feed.
Yeah, so that was almost a vanity feature that I created for myself because I didn't like any of the existing podcast players. And so we integrated the ability to just subscribe to podcasts and listen in inside the other web. So you don't have to switch apps and you don't have mm-hmm. to pay Spotify or any of the other paid podcast players. So it's not inside the same feed. It's just a separate tab within the app. You can switch to podcasts. In my case, I'm kind of a boring podcast listener in that I have maybe 6 podcasts that I'm subscribed to, and I very rarely explore new ones. Mm-hmm. And so when I open Spotify, they would bombard me with more and more suggestions on what I might also like. And I'm probably about to drive somewhere. I'm not going to explore something new, right? So that's kind of how it ended up there.
Is that audio only type of podcast, or you can get video ones too?
Right now it's audio only, and we actually use a third party API to integrate it, right? So we're pulling all the data from Podchaser to do that essentially.
Do that. So because some podcasts are on RSS feeds, so I'm wondering if are you picking up like the RSS and using that?
It is, but we're not the ones aggregating the RSS. We use an API to tell us what the RSS of each podcast is. And then we can pull the audio through that.
You pull it. That's cool. Because I've been in podcasting since 2016, and it has opened up where it's like Spotify for music. There's like brand new artists all the time. There's brand new podcasts all the time, and people can get inundated. And so it's cool to have a filtering effect. And I think it's also good not to get into the clickbait, but the paywalls too. Maybe you can describe that. I know what clickbait is. What is a paywall?
So a paywall is when you click on a link to an article, and instead of being able to read the article, you immediately get a screen that says you've read your 5 articles for this month, right? So right now, what we're doing in the other web itself is we're just not scraping articles from those outlets, so that it's the one place where you're guaranteed if you click on any link, you're not going to see a paywall. Whereas on Google News, that happens to you every second click, basically, right? We have the ability to actually scrape the articles and just present them here, but that would be not nice. So we're just avoiding those outlets altogether. And we're assuming that if they show a paywall to people, that basically is a message that says, we don't want this content appearing elsewhere, right? So we respect that and we just don't take that content at all.
That's a good thing because a lot of people do get, kind of upset that they want to read an article, and as soon as they hit it, they're being asked to subscribe or pay for it, and you can't get past it unless you do that action. They're kind of trying to force it, and people want the freedom to really, use the web the way that originally it was set up, and you didn't have to keep on subscribing and paying for things. And it's kind of it seems like you want to bring it back to like, okay, I want it to be an information, like a library. And I don't necessarily have to pay for things that when I go to the library. I just take out what I want.
Yeah, well, so there's a few aspects to this. One aspect is I think it's completely reasonable for, let's say, the Financial Times to decide that they don't want to share their articles with non-paying subscribers, right? They have the right to do that. My question is always, but why does Google News include links to that if I follow the link and I hit a wall? Right. So my problem is not with the outlet that put a paywall in front of their content. That's a reasonable choice. But why does the aggregator or the distributor or the search engine include this content in a way that makes me click on it and then gets frustrated? Right. So I want to be able to just disable that on the middleman platform side. Right. So that's why we implemented that in other web. So you'll never encounter it unless you really want to. If you want to subscribe to Financial Times, it's an amazing outlet. So
how do you determine junk and fake news and misinformation? Like, do you have filters that can your algorithms, if you've been able to figure out how to weed through that?
So there's a few different things there. Fake news is different from misinformation, different from junk, right? So with junk specifically, the way we defined it is we just created a bunch of different machine learning models that detect various well-defined aspects of it. Like you mentioned clickbait. Clickbait is pretty easy to detect because you just train the model to do what humans do to detect it, right? It's typically something where the headline doesn't quite match the content. So you ask 10,000 people to look at articles and say for each one, is it clickbait? Is it not clickbait? And then you teach a model to do basically the same thing, almost as well as the human did. And so we did that for about 20 different aspects. And then we just created the linear addition formula. And the article that scores the best on those 20 is considered high quality. The articles that score the worst are considered low quality. Misinformation is almost a subcategory of this, where you're saying it's just teaching you something wrong, essentially. There's no way for us to know whether something is true or not. Like if you claim there's a lion in your kitchen, I'm not going to break into your house, go to your kitchen and check, right? Fact checkers claim they do this, they don't, right? For the most part, they're just making it up. So we're focusing more on form and not on function, in the sense that if you say you have a lion in your kitchen, we're going to trust you as long as you include images or third-party accounts or other forms of evidence that I expect to go along with that claim, right? So I'm not trying to fact check the claim itself. I'm just making sure that there's third-party references and that they match what the claim was, right? So that's kind of our approach to misinformation and fake news. I think one of the aspects that people don't appreciate enough about what happened to news on the internet and to content in general is that because there's just an incentive to generate clicks and views, because that's ultimately what pays, most of the stuff that we have that calls itself news isn't fake news. It's just not news at all. It is just pure junk with no value whatsoever. And that is easier to detect than fake news. Fake news means somebody went through the trouble of faking it, right? But when I open Google News and it shows me an article from CNN and the title of the article is "Stop What You're Doing and Watch This Elephant Play with Bubbles," that's an actual article that I saw. I have the screenshots, right? It's not fake news. It's not news at all, right? So there's nobody filtering this right now for some reason. And I think that is the first thing you should filter, because now you can pay attention to other things because your bandwidth is not spent on that.
Yeah, sometimes you'll have like a legitimate source like a CNN or an NBC, and then in that feed somewhere there on that page is like a fake, not a fake article, but like a sponsored article that's from like a company that's actually pitching it as news. And it's actually like an infomercial, or it's an opinion piece that has nothing to do. It's not straight news. It's like an opinion. And wasn't looking for opinion. I'm actually looking for headlines, you know?
Yeah. No, that's another modality of bad news content that is pure junk, right? But CNN itself writes junk as well, because they eventually somehow also get evaluated on the same standard as all the fake news peddlers of how many clicks did you get on the ads on your site? Or how many views did you sell of the ads on the different articles on your site? So they are competing and they're creating a lot of content that isn't news, but they're trying to dress it up as if it were. I'll give you another crazy example, and this one involves search. But if you go on Google right now, especially if it's uncustomized, so you will see the same results as me, and you search for best protein powder, who would you expect the results to be from? Something related to health, chemistry, something like that, right? The top two results are from Forbes and lifescience.com.
Is that because they pay for the most money for the to get clicks? You know,
That's because they have the highest authority websites in general, and they're using that authority to write junk content that ranks protein powders because that's more clicks, right? But obviously Forbes did not actually do any work evaluating protein powders, right? They're just using the authority they have with Google to create another junk page that people will click on, and then they might see ads on that page. So that entire ecosystem has essentially evolved to just sell clicks and views. There is no value that's actually flowing from one website to another here.
So it seems like the salespeople got in charge. like if the salesman decided, the marketing people, like we've got to get income, and so we're gonna go and try to make that the highest priority. And if you're a person that is kind of like the person that would go to the library and read the Wall Street Journal and read the Times and not buy it, right? They actually went to the library and got it and look up information you don't want to pay, but you're showing you don't want to pay. You're going to the library to read it. Yeah. So like getting all this clickbait and all these other things, you're not interested in that. Mm-hmm. You just want what you want.
Yeah. So salespeople got in charge is one way to look at it. Another way is to say salespeople will always be in charge because those are for-profit organizations. They need to make money. And so the question is, how do we as consumers, as a society, actually create incentives for those companies to make good content? Like basically try to align making good content with making money, because right now mm-hmm. they are obviously out of alignment. The way to make money is to make junk, right? The way to make good content is to be a nonprofit and beg other people for donations. That seems to be the way it's set up right now. And so our approach is, well, first of all, let's filter out the junk and let's convince as many people as possible to use a client that filters out the junk. And now you've created an incentive for somebody sitting at Forbes or CNN or any other respectable outlet to say, look, making good content pays. When we make junk, people don't see it because they use clients that filter it out.
Yeah, if the whole ecosystem starts having, you know, companies like your company and people start going and saying, I want to use the other web. I want to use another, you know, system, but I don't want to get all this clickbait because so that will prove to the, you know, it's just like what happens in music. Like if you go and oversaturate the market with clones, eventually people will stop listening to that genre because it's full of clones, right? And they will look for something that's more unique. So the record industry always ends up doing the same thing. They just clone whatever hits and then they oversaturate it and then nobody wants to hear it anymore. And then they move to the next thing and then they wonder why it went away. But went away because you're oversaturated and you just kept on not being interesting because you keep on thinking that the same thing's going to work over and over. So I think this is the same kind of strategy that if they keep on doing it, they're going to lose consumers. And then people are going to go to people like companies like OtherWeb and say, hey, I don't want this.
Yeah, I think they already have. And what you're seeing is if you look at the stats on social media, its usage is going down since last year. Right? It was constantly going up and now it's finally going down. If you're looking at news, it's even more stark. I think right now, 42% of American adults are consciously avoiding the news, and that's the highest it's ever been. Right? So a decade ago, it was less than 20, right? So people are falling out and it seems like we're a little bit too late and that somebody should have offered this alternative earlier. I think the problem is the toolkit was not developed because it's really hard to do what we do with human editors. So you actually need machine learning, natural language processing, to be able to do this at scale. Mm-hmm. And that only became viable about 2 years ago.
No, so the tech became cost effective where it's actually not so expensive that you can provide it without an outrageous price that you can actually get it done. And it's actually feasible.
It became feasible and I think we're at the stage where 2 years ago it was impossible, and in 2 years it will be everywhere. Right. So this is the peak of when the entire industry should transition to something like this. And to what you mentioned before, that we want to create as much pull on the entire ecosystem to really affect what is being produced. So that's one of the reasons why when we make a model, we actually open it to the world. We want others to do this as well. We don't want to hoard the working models for ourselves. Rather, we want to share with other people making clients like this so that at least we can all agree on one thing. We should all filter the junk out together.
Well, what's your opinion of like AI being used to create AI driven hosted podcast, AI created like songs, AI created content that actually, you know, a human, maybe it looks like it's a human that did it, but it's actually AI that did it. And so the question would in the future, do you think that would then become oversaturated and you might have to like filter some of that out? Could customers might not want like an AI generated host? They want a real human being host
of a podcast. I think it's hard to tell. So for anything that is for human consumption, that humans can express their taste, right? So they can do what you just said and just say, even if the AI host is better, I want a human host, right? And I think this will happen with some disciplines like sales, for example. People will continue to buy only from human salespeople. That's my gut feeling, right? I think company owners will still only negotiate with other company owners. You don't want to close a deal with some robot that is thinking 10 steps ahead of you, right? So just like chess players only play human chess players for the most part, because playing a computer at this point is meaningless, right? On the other hand, when it comes to something like creating pop music, it's quite conceivable that the AI will just win, because people don't express that much. I don't think people express their taste that much in consuming music, at least in popular culture for the most part. They just listen to whatever's in the top 10 hits that somebody selected for them. And only a small subset of people with exquisite taste actually express it in selecting what they're listening to, right? Most of us are influenced by what some radio show, some podcaster, or some other recommendation engine told us we should listen to. So it could be that AI takes over. Hard for me to guess for sure.
Yeah, well, in my main line, I'm a podcaster that interviews emerging and independent bands. So I try to push up, you know, interesting new things that are not in the top 20. That's been my claim to fame. And I still think I will have a place in that world, because the AI is only going to be picking from like the top 10, top 20, top 50.
You should be careful with that assumption, because, you know, I used to play chess when I was a kid quite a bit. So I followed that world. And I saw this evolution of chess computers from essentially initially being bad to being good, but in a really weird way where they didn't play like humans. They played like robots, meaning their play made no sense to humans, but they just calculated way faster. And so at some point in 1997, the best computer beat the best human chess player in a match just by having a supercomputer with 200 processors running, right? But then what happened right now with AlphaZero, that is now owned by Google, right? If when I look at those games, it's playing like a human. I cannot tell the difference. If somebody showed me this game and I wouldn't recognize it, I would think this is some classic game from the 70s I somehow missed. Mm-hmm. But it really looks like a genius human being from a different era, almost like a throwback to the past, because in part, AlphaZero trained itself by looking at historic games of the best humans of the past. And so I can't tell the difference anymore. And I don't know, this might be coming for music. I don't want to sound ominous, but I think there's a chance.
I'm just being a believer in music. I don't think an AI will ever become like a Jim Morrison or a Jimi Hendrix or the Beatles. I think it will clone those aspects, but it will never be able to create something new. Human beings have the ability to do cross-genre that is actually uniquely personal. And every musician kind of takes what the past has done, but they put their own stamp on it. And AI doesn't have their own stamp, because it's not a person, right? It's going to go and maybe cross-genre, but it's not going to do what Hendrix did. Nobody even matches Hendrix today, right? So I think that there's always going to be room for a human being in art to do something that is going to break out and create a new genre, you know, like hip hop.
I hope that is the case. I'm not sure. Let's say since AlphaZero, I'm less sure. I would have said exactly what you're saying 5 years ago, right? But right now it doesn't seem as obvious anymore. It could be that we're underestimating how far this can go. But the other thing to consider, and I think for musicians, this would be pretty bad news, is that even if some humans will still maintain that ability to be unique and be above AI, I think most humans won't. And so the number of musicians that can make money is probably going to diminish, right? And we're going to see this even in my profession, right? So a lot of people say, well, if you've been replaced by a robot, you should go learn how to code. Coding is the first thing that AI is going to automate and take away from humans, right? Because that is a process that can be taught. And therefore, if you can teach a human, you can teach an AI to do it, right? And so I think the number of programmers we will have in the world 50 years from now will be 10 times smaller than it is now.
Well, I think it's kind of sad for innovation, because, you know, will AI generate a Steve Jobs, or, you know, will it create, you know, somebody who's going to come up with that idea? Maybe it can clone. I still, I think that you're still going to have the exceptional individual, right, that will come up with something new. They will create an Apple computer. They will create a Microsoft.
For the entrepreneur role, for sure, right? So I'm a big believer that AI will not be entrepreneurial, right? Like, so a human will be the entrepreneur, but then eventually that human needs to today hire 150,000 coders, right? So I think 50 years from now, it can hire 3,000 exceptional coders and the rest will just be automated, right, to do the same job.
I guess society's got to determine, like, if all the high-end jobs go to AI, what are humans going to do? I mean, from a social standpoint, there's a point where, like, if you just, it's like Henry Ford had his workers be the customers, right? So right. If you have no workers as customers, right, if you just automate so much, then, you know, if you don't have any workers, they can't buy your stuff, right? If there's no economy, you have to have a consumer. Right. So the consumer, right. If you go and automate the person at the hamburger stand and the person at the Walmart and the person at the job, who's going to buy this stuff? Like, eventually you have to figure out that people have to be consumers. So like, it's not socially, if you're social planning, it's actually a bad plan to get rid of all your consumers.
Yeah. Well, I think we're not really social planning and we're not really good at social planning to begin with. Right. But I think the hope is that we'll invent new jobs. Right, just like I'm sure the invention of the car put a lot of horse buggy drivers out of a job, right? But eventually we came up with new jobs for them to do. So hopefully we can come up with new jobs for most people to do. And I think, again, some professions will stay. I don't see most salespeople being replaced, even though it's not our favorite profession sort of in normal society, right? That's probably the one that's least replaceable because they build empathy with you before actually closing the deal, right? And AI cannot build empathy with a human. And so as long as humans have money, humans will have to sell to them.
Well, I think like a role I have is a business system analyst, and I'm not a coder, right? I determine requirements from business people. I talk to business people, and I come up with an idea, a use case. You know, and I don't know if maybe in the future the AI will be so far that it even becomes an analyst that it can figure out use case. But I think people, directors and, you know, the ABC level people want to talk to a human being in a conference room and do a JAD session. And I don't know if they want to do that with an AI. Now, when they go to code it, the programmer will do it. I work with programmers, but I think that kind of role will still potentially exist.
Yeah, and I've managed programmers for a long time, so I can say many of them are indistinguishable from robots to begin with. And so it's not a big change to start talking to a machine instead of talking to the average coder. Sorry, I can make fun of my own, right?
I can code to a certain extent VBA and SQL, but I understand, you know, what the heavy, barely duty coders. But So the future of other web, do you have other services that you're planning out? Is this the primary service? Like, you originally didn't have this as your primary service. Are you working on other types of services or products?
So right now, the main thing is to add features to this one so that people can consume more and more types of content and we can allow them to customize their feed in better and better way. And we want to add more and more social aspects to it. So right now there is a commenting and sharing functionality, but we may add functionality like follow your friend's feed. So if he already customized it and you're new to the service, why not trust his taste and read what he already customized, right? We're adding a lot of customization that you can control so that essentially if you go on TikTok or YouTube today, it learns pretty quickly what you like, right? But if it makes a mistake, you can't undo it anymore. And that's extremely annoying to people. Like I know some people that watched soccer during the World Cup, but they don't want to watch soccer after the World Cup is over. But it's really hard to make YouTube forget the fact that you watch soccer for a month. It's now it's everywhere. So we want to give people more control and yet give them the option to turn on this kind of automatic learning of what they like. So that's pretty much the roadmap for the product right now. We want to just beef it up. If we're talking about what comes afterwards, I still think that the same basic technology for filtering content can be used in many different parts of the information ecosystem. So not just in a client, but also a person placing an ad on a page might want to know what the quality of the content on that page is, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so we can create a data stream that goes into advertising DSPs, for example, right? A person writing an article might want to know whether or not this article will be filtered out by smart clients like the other web. So we can create a tool that looks kind of like Grammarly for the journalist writing the article or the editor actually editing it. So there's a variety of tools we can build that all build on this basic capability of evaluating content quality.
I think that's a fascinating thing, because you know, all the tools that you can use, you know, in the modern era, you know, being a musician, when Pro Tools showed up, you know, that was a big revelation. Napster for all musicians, that was a big revelation to all of us. iTunes, and now like streaming services like Spotify, people had to step up. They've had to go and transfer to video. Like a lot of musicians, we've transferred into doing shorts and reels and, you know, TikToks. In order to be able to engage the audience, we can't just be audio. We had to switch. And as things change, you know, if things become holograms, we go to that. You know, you have to go wherever the tech is going and to reach your customer, to reach the audience. And so it's interesting, you know, the different tools might be useful to have tools that give good information to, like, you know, creative people to figure out what would work, you know, what better strategy, you know, other than looking at what the top 10, is there certain characteristics of songs that work better, you know, in certain markets? Is there a better tool to kind of analyze your audience and kind of tailor music so you know it's actually going to kick? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure those tools can be created with roughly the same toolkit that I'm using, right? So it's coming. My team would probably be the wrong team to work on the music aspect of it, because none of us is a musician. My mom's a piano teacher. That's about as close as I got.
Yeah, you probably want to get some musicians, some producers in there to understand, in recording engineers to kind of give you the bass. But I do thank you for joining us. Everybody can check out that link, https://otherweb.com. And that will be clickable when we fully publish. And this is on YouTube. It's on Twitch. It's on Facebook right now. It will be on Spotify Video Podcast, Apple Podcast, Google Play, many, many other types of platforms. And I will create a landing page for you. You'll get that shortly. We fully publish tomorrow on all those other platforms. So thank you again for talking to us. And I think this is a really cool tool. I'm going to actually check it out, because I am kind of tired of clickbait and paywalls myself. And so I think that's something that, you know, I want for myself, the difference between what the world I'm in and the world I could be in.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Bye. Good night.